You're listening to Audio Theater in a Darker Shade. This is DarkerProjects.com. And now our feature presentation.
The following audio is explicit in nature and may contain adult themes, light sexual situations, violent content, or strong language.
Theorizing that one could time travel within his own lifetime, Dr. Sam Beckett led an elite group of scientists into the desert to develop a top-secret project known as Quantum Leap. Pressured to prove his theories or lose funding, Dr. Beckett prematurely stepped into the project accelerator and vanished. He awoke to find himself in the past, suffering from partial amnesia and facing a mirror image that was not his own. Fortunately, contact with his own time was maintained through brainwave transmissions with Al, the project observer, who appeared in the form of a hologram that only Dr. Beckett can see and hear. Trapped in the past, Dr. Beckett finds himself leaping from life to life, putting things right what once went wrong, and hoping each time that his next leap will be the leap home.
Project's version of Quantum Leap. With Paul Arbisi as Sam Beckett and Ben Harmer as Albert Calabici. It's March 17th, 1981, in Wilderness Lake, Idaho. It was a nightmare from the beginning, and it keeps getting worse. As Laura Beauchamp, Sam fears for his life when he finds himself running from two serial killers known for butchering their prey. Although he can escape, something pulls him back to the scene for another confrontation. Written by A.J. Burfield.
The energy drain from this leap had been enormous. The extra power grids and some of the mainframe had to be taken offline and replaced. Ziggy slept for a day. By the time Al was able to contact Sam again, it had been almost 30 hours. It appeared to be a straightforward leap, keeping an older man from driving and crashing into a crowded bus stop. Sam had leaped into a retirement home, and all he had to do was spend a lot of time lounging around and not drive at the indicated time. That time had passed, and Dr. Beckett was now in flux. The staff decided that sending out another leaper was not advisable in the future. The power demand was too much for the system, and the possibility of permanently damaging Ziggy was just too great. I was sitting with Al in the cafeteria waiting for the word on the next leap. Wasn't he mad at you for taking so long to get to the retirement home?
Yeah, but that's not like it hasn't happened before. He got over it.
Does he?
No, he doesn't remember you. At least, he doesn't ask about you.
Now I know how Donna feels.
I'm sure somewhere in his Swiss cheese brain, there's a little spot reserved just for you, Sammy Joe. When he comes home, everything will be fine.
Thanks, Al.
This disorientation of leaping was slow to wash away this time. My senses crept back as if they were reluctant to complete the connections to my brain. I felt pain slam into my body like lightning. I gasped and struggled to escape the pain. I tried to flee when the pain was paled by panic when I realized I couldn't move. My hands were bound behind me and my feet were lashed together. I tried to yell, but I gagged on the cloth, clamping tightly through my mouth and around my head. I tried to control my panic, concentrating on breathing through my nose, looking wildly around the dank, dark room that smelled of mold, hoping to locate an ally of any sort. I saw two small windows set high in the wall that showed nothing but grayness, trash and litter all around the room, and a solid wooden door that was closed. I was on a smelly, thin, dirty mattress on the floor as I struggled vainly against the ties and the pain. The door caught my attention as it thumped and rattled, stuck to the frame surrounding it. I froze and focused on the door, hopeful and fearful at who may be coming in. The door finally gave way and jerked open, letting in a blocky Asian man. I held my breath, trying to gauge the man's alliance.
Oh boy, she's awake.
I couldn't remember when or where I had heard that my leaps would be getting tougher. I don't recall ever having that thought before. But this time a disembodied voice said those words to me as I looked at the man that had just come into the room. I knew instantly I was in a desperate situation and needed help now. And although Al is just a hologram that couldn't physically help me, I needed someone on my side, even if all they could do were offer encouraging words. I was in trouble, and keeping my mind working on escape was difficult when battling the pain and panic rising in my gut.
Oh my god, this is bad. Sam, calm down. I'm here to help you. I know what's happening. Don't do anything, okay? He's untying your feet, but don't do anything, Sam, okay? You could kick the daylights out of him with the taekwondo, you know, but now's not the time, Sam. Your name is Laura Buchamp, and you are a kidnap victim. This man is August Yang, and he and his partner are two of the most notorious serial killers in the country. You are in grave danger, buddy, but I'm here to get you out. Ziggy says you're here to escape, Sam, but not yet. Yang's partner, Charles Morin, is somewhere around, so don't make a move until I can locate him. Hang in there, Sam. We'll get you out of this. Gushy! Center me on the other person here! What?
Get up. Move. Let's go!
Morin is out of the immediate area, Sam, but we'll locate him. Yang won't do anything without Morin's direction, so you're okay for now. Understand? Morin and Yang have this compound in the mountains, Sam, northeast of Idaho Falls. You're in a wilderness area outside of Yellowstone National Park, miles from any town. In about 3 years, these two nozzles get caught and tried, but in that time, they murder about 15 girls. We don't know how many they have killed to this point. You see, Laura Beauchamp is one of the victims. Her bones are finally located and identified after the grounds here are searched for evidence for the trial. No, stop, Sam. Don't do anything yet, Sam. You have to trust me. They don't know a time of death for Laura, but she was reported as a missing person 3 days ago. These two nozzles are a sadistic pair, Sam, into sexual torture and all that. Poor girl. Anyway, when you escape and turn them in, you'll save a lot of lives. This is a vital leap, buddy. Videotapes at the trial showed girls getting tortured in a room like this. God, this is sick. These guys need to die, Sam. Morin and Yang were finally discovered when one of their victims escaped and made it to the police. She almost died from exposure, and that was later in the summer than you are. She was maimed, lost a... Oh my god, Sam. They cut off one of her breasts. These guys are animals, Sam. They were arrested, and Morin was able to kill himself at the police station. Yang tried to direct all guilt on the dead guy, saying he was bewitched by him or something. What a creep. Of the two, Sam, Ziggy thinks Yang is the weak link. He's the one you can escape from, but I have to know where Morin is first. I'll find him pronto, buddy. Then we'll get you out of here. I'll be right back, Sam. I'm gonna check the car out there.
I gotta get out of here. I have to. So tired.
I found Morin, Sam. I followed Yang to the other end of the house. Morin's asleep or passed out or something. Yang left him alone and he's on his way back. Now's a good time to get out, but you can't wake up Morin. Ziggy says your chances are 80% for escape with just Yang around.
Hello, pretty one. Come on. Smile for me.
Oh, God.
Come on, Sam. Open your eyes and think. Gotta get out of this. Quick, Sam, before he yells and wakes up Morin. Clobber him.
Damn it.
Stop, Sam. That's enough. Stop it. I think he deserves a lot more, too, but you gotta get out of here. Come on, over here. Use the knife to cut the strap. Okay, now check that pervert's body for the cuff key, Sam. Then let's get you out.
I have to get out, Al. I can't stay here.
Yeah, I know, buddy. Now, let's get going. Get his clothes. You'll need them. And we don't have much time. I'll go check on that other clown.
I have to get out.
You're out of time, buddy. Get up. I know you're sick to your stomach. I know you'd rather kill him where he lay. But there's no time for that. Morin is awake and will be here any minute. Move it.
Which way?
Just follow me, Sam. You concentrate on me and staying on your feet. I'll get you out. I'm taking you out a door that puts you closer to the forest. You'll have more cover that way. Let's go, Sam. Morin's on his way. Here it is. Once you're outside, go straight ahead right into the woods. Don't look back or stop. You hear? Slip out. Don't slam the door.
Right.
Go! Go! Don't stop! Go! That's it, Sam. Keep going. Don't stop. Let's go.
Stop.
I know you don't have much energy left. Come on. Just a bit more, buddy. See that crevice? Go into there. That's it. Al. I know. Rest. I'm watching. I won't let you down. I quickly stepped back into 1999 to see what changes we had accomplished while Sam slept. Ziggy, how's it looking?
Considering the climate and temperature and the time in this area, the physical condition of Dr. Beckett, and the type of clothing and supplies, it is a 32.6% chance that Dr. Beckett will make it to the authorities in the area.
Are you saying it's a 67.4% chance he'll die or that he'll get caught?
I gave a percentage on Dr. Beckett's success, not how he would fail. I calculate 40.7% that Dr. Beckett will die of exposure and 26.7% for recapture. Are you happy now?
No, Ziggy, I'm not. Did you factor in my help and experience in wilderness survival?
Yes, Admiral.
And his chances for success are still that low?
Yes, Admiral.
Are there any other factors you used and didn't tell me?
Yes.
Well, what are they?
I also factored in information on the future survivor's mental condition and abilities at her time of discovery, taken from doctors and psychiatrist records. And there was a factor of luck that she was found at all.
I want you to recalculate the odds, throwing out those last parameters, and factor in mine and Sam's instead. Any difference?
But Admiral, every time Dr. Beckett leaps, there's some mind mixing with the subject and Dr. Beckett. I cannot ignore that fact.
Well, you will this time. The information you used isn't from Laura Beauchamp, but from some other person altogether. Or would that be too hard for you?
54.73% chance of success. And I am capable of more difficult problems.
Thank you. Gushy, I'll be online for long periods of time helping Sam get through this. I need some detailed maps of the area in that time.
Yes, Admiral. Will do.
Al, where are you?
Oh, Sam, you're awake. I was worried there. What?
You're decked out in black and neon orange?
All hunters wear this color in the woods. Keeps them from getting shot.
That outfit needs to be put out of its misery.
Well, looks like you're recovering nicely.
I need food and water. I guess medical attention is out of the question for now. I don't think that anything is broken. And thanks, Al, for your help back there. I'd probably be dead now if it wasn't for you.
You're welcome. Now, you need supplies. I hate to tell you, but the only ones around here are back at that place.
I didn't want to hear that.
Yeah, I know, but remember, you got me. I'll get you in closer, then check the place out. You'll need food and a coat or blanket or something. A tent would be nice, but let's be realistic here. Follow me, but don't come out until I say. Come on. Stay here and keep quiet. The compound is just ahead. Stay with me, Sam, and this'll be a piece of cake. I'll be right back.
Okay.
You still with me here? You have to do this. I can't.
I know. I guess I'm ready.
You'll do better without the shoes. It'll be easier than having them keep falling off your feet. Let's go. I'll lead.
I stopped when I came at the edge of the woods and spotted Al standing in the opening between me and a collection of buildings, chilling up my spine when I saw the small shack where I'd leaped in. Al was motioning wildly. I didn't want to do it, but I swallowed and slunk across the open space to a small utility shed and crouched down behind some piles of newspaper.
There's a garage thing over here that has a freezer and canned stuff, and probably a bag to carry things.
I was hungry. My stomach was cramping, and everything in me was screaming for me to run and not look back. Where are they?
Yang walked down the road to the right, and I think Morin went looking for you in that beat-up Jeep, because it's gone. I didn't see him anywhere around here, so get moving.
There's no one else here? I mean, no more victims?
Not that I could find. Now come on!
Al headed toward a low wooden block building. I followed, slipping around the side to the front doors. The whole compound had piles of junk everywhere. Stuffed trash bags were just tossed behind the outer buildings, having been torn open by various critters, possibly bears. That's all I would need to run into now. There were five buildings that I could see. The shack and cellar that I had leaped into, the garage that I was in now, and a large stock building that seemed to be the main house that I had escaped from. A small outhouse and a medium block building that had trash cans along the side. For all the good it did, it looked like they never used them. I checked the cluttered garbage and found a dilapidated freezer. The inner door and walls were caked with ice, and I pried a couple of paper-wrapped packages from the shelves before I scraped some ice from it and put it in my mouth, thankful for any moisture.
That's wrapped meat, Sam. Get a bag and take some. You'll need it. Oh, look, there's a canvas bag there. Use that. There are also metal cabinets over here. Look inside. There may be more food.
Shove more ice in my mouth. Tossed a half dozen frozen packs into the bag with the meat, and then opened the cabinet. I found camping gear and some old freeze-dried food packets. I grabbed them all. Rooting around a bit more, I turned up a box of matches, a compass, a canteen,
and a leather work glove. The other glove was missing, but I took it anyway. As the seconds ticked on, my heart pounded harder and the urge to flee grew. I passed up a small tent for a ready sleeping bag, knowing that I could only take what I could carry. I returned to the freezer and put more ice in my mouth.
Careful, Sam. You'll get cramps.
I already had them. What's that?
What? Oh, that pile of clothes near the garage door? Not too clean, but they'll help. But what's that? Careful, Sam.
It's the toe of a woman's shoe. The pump used to be beige. Half of it was now stained in blood, and I could see nibble marks from some small animal. I flung the shoe in revulsion. The scent of dried blood combined with the revelation of what I saw made my stomach lurch. I turned my back on the clothes and clamped my hand over my mouth to keep from vomiting and broke out in a cold sweat. My legs gave out and I dropped to the floor.
Sam! There's no time for this. Yane is just down the road here, and we've got to move. Look at the clothes. There's a sweater here and two smaller tennis shoes. They don't match, but they'll stay on your feet. Come on, buddy. Get yourself together.
I crawled over and picked up the items Al pointed out without question. I stuffed them in the bag and stumbled over to the freezer.
Are you sure there's no one else here? Where did those clothes come from? Why didn't I leap in to save them?
I don't know. Ziggy pulled the information from the trial transcripts. Yane didn't say how many girls there were before Laura. He pled the Fifth Amendment. You know the self-incrimination thing?
I think you need to look around.
But Ziggy doesn't.
Just do it, okay?
All right already. Jeez. Just keep out of sight.
Okay.
The shoes were a much better fit. I stood up and checked the small wooden shelves and found a couple of easy open cans of beans. Yanking them open, I devoured them both and decided to search for water. There was a back door out of the garage and I pushed it carefully open and stuck my head out. I saw a hose bib and put my lips to the faucet after forcing it open. I drank until my stomach threatened to cramp again, then filled the canteen. All I needed now was a better jacket. With the canteen in full bag in hand, I crept along the back of the building to the corner closest to the main house. I shivered, remembering the room with the hooks, but managed to carefully dash across the open space and not fall over any of the trash piles. I tried not to think of what could be in some of those piles, and I peeked in each window. Each room I saw was as trashy as the yard, and it sickened me to think of living in all this. The fourth window proved to be my best bet, as it was mostly clothing strewn about and a sorry-looking bed piled with magazines. I dropped the bags and pulled out the screen and forced the squealing window open. Climbing through it was tricky with the baggy clothes and numb fingers, and I was hanging halfway inside when a pair of black shoes and orange handcuffs popped into my line of vision and made me lurch and fall through the holograph into a heap.
You'll never make it as a cat burglar.
Tell me something helpful for a change.
What are you looking for? Look at those magazines on the bed. Looks like the pornography business is safe with the amount these losers buy. Wow, look at the Grand Tetons on that one.
Al, I'm looking for a warm jacket and socks. Then we can go. Unless you found something. I mean, other than that.
No. Just a roll of carpet back there behind the trees that gave me the creeps. Exactly what a body could get rolled up in.
I regarded him for a few seconds. Under normal circumstances, I would have chided him about watching too many horror movies. But now living in this reality, I couldn't argue the possibility. I went back to look for a jacket and I noticed that my hands were shaking again. I needed to get out of here. Now! I finally found a dirty down jacket by the closet, several pairs of socks, which I stuck in the jacket pocket, and thermal underwear bottoms in the corner of the closet, along with a dusty backpack hanging on a nail. I stuffed the jacket, socks, and underwear into the backpack and made for the window. Al stuck his head out into the hall and jumped back inside.
Sam! Yane's coming in the front door! Get out of here!
I threw the backpack out the window and heaved myself over the sill. I heard the front door bang shut and the sound of footsteps growing louder. I wiggled out of the window, falling unceremoniously onto the ground, then jumped to my feet
and dragged the bag and backpack to my shoulder as I ran back the way I came. I had just entered the forest again when a blast of a shotgun ripped through the bushes behind me.
Sam, he's got a gun!
No kidding!
There are times in some leaps when I honestly think it's my last moment on Earth. And this was one of those times. Although the water and small amount of food I had managed to find were a great help, there was still a lot to overcome. Between the altitude and the collar choking off my breath and blood, it was getting harder and harder to keep it going. It was only my determination that kept me going. I had to evade Yang long enough to rest. If I didn't, well, either way, I was dead.
The cat and mouse pursuit through the woods was difficult with all the equipment Sam had taken. It was only the head start he had on Yang that gave him an edge, and it was a very slight edge. I was the one that tipped the scales in Sam's favor. I directed Sam quickly and carefully, using the map supplied by Ziggy as a guide. My knowledge of the terrain and how to cover tracks were the only thing that kept Sam from Yang's sight. What saved him was time. When the sun dropped behind the mountains in the afternoon, Yang knew he had to get back or suffer the elements. I watched the swarming man move away for a long while before returning to Sam, convinced that he wasn't coming right back. When I got back to Sam, he was breathing heavily in the thin air and had collapsed in a circle of trees. You're safe for a while, Sam. He won't be back for a while, if at all. The compound is at least 3 miles back. I'm exhausted here. And he did all the running. Hey, a fairy ring.
What?
A fairy ring. That ring in the circles you're in? When they grow in a circle like that, it's called a fairy ring. It's supposed to be magical.
Magical? Do I get 3 wishes?
3 wishes? I'm not talking genies here, Sam. I'm talking mysticism. And you can use all the help you can get right now.
I guess it's one of these freeze-dried food packets because the wrap stuff isn't thawed yet, and I need something to eat now. I need a fire, I think.
Your best bet is against the cliff there. Build it under the overhang, and it'll disperse the smoke some. Although it won't matter so much now in the dark, it will in the morning. Plus, there are some boulders you can sleep behind. Come on, let's move. Food was the only thing that got him to move. Sam took the pan, the canteen, and the matches and stumbled over to the rocks and cleared out a small area to make a fire. There was enough wood around, and soon there was a small blaze going just in time to warm his frigid fingers. Sam was glad he had grabbed the single leather glove, as the metal handle of the pan would have been too hot to handle. The paste-like gray mush that evolved from one of the packets and water looked awful, but tasted like heaven to Sam. He gobbled it up greedily and made a second batch of something brown. He swallowed that just as quickly. I couldn't help but watch in amazement. I was going to get something to eat myself, but, you just ruined my appetite.
Sorry, Al. Just get me out of here, okay?
No argument here, buddy. But just don't go to sleep yet, or you'll freeze. At least get the sleeping bag and clothes. Come on, move it. Then you can sleep.
Al kept nagging me into motion, and I dragged the items back and prepared to sleep. I wrapped myself in the smelly sleeping bag with my face close to the glowing embers. Al had made sure that I was behind a boulder and safely out of sight. I closed my eyes and whispered, "Thanks, Al."
No problem, Sam.
A noise pulled me back up from the depths of sleep to confused awareness. It was completely black, and it took me several seconds to realize where I was. The scuffling, scraping noise continued, and I sat up, feeling the cold air creep into my sleeping bag as I moved. I frowned as I zeroed in on the direction of the noise, which was out of my sight beyond the boulder, and I debated on investigating further. Finally, the noise accented with a tearing sound and teased me enough to stand and look over the rock. It was black as pitch, save for the bits of moonlight that managed to dart between the leaves' canopies. There was a light breeze that made the light dance and create a jumpy effect on the forest floor. I squinted, trying to make out the source of the noise. All I could see was a shadow, and one huge shadow was moving around the fairy ring of trees. My heart jumped into my throat as thoughts of Yang and Moran leaped into my mind. I calmed myself down when I heard a wild grunt of an animal. Whatever it was big and eating the remainder of my food.
Hey!
I couldn't believe I just called out. There was a slight pause in the noise, followed by a snuffling sound when the shadow continued its feasting. I stood up, helplessly watching as a bear devoured my supplies. It seemed like ages, but it was probably only about 45 minutes before the critter finished his snack and glided off into the shadows. I shivered, my breath clearly visible as icy clouds, then stood with the sleeping bag wrapped around me, miserably going over my options. They were few. At least I had a canteen with me. I decided not to retrieve what was left, if anything, in case the intruder returned. Better the beast was in the woods than in my campsite. I slid back down to the ground, waiting for the sunrise, and somehow fell back to sleep.
Hey, Sam, wake up! Time to get some space between you and this place. Come on, Sam, rise and shine.
Oh, sun's not up.
Well, aren't we, Miss Congeniality? You need to get moving from this spot. The gruesome twosome will be here first thing, I think.
I woke immediately at the mention of the pair. I rolled up my backpack, collected the pan and glove, and felt for the matches in my pocket. With inventory done, I buried the fire at Al's suggestion and tried to wipe out the signs of my presence, which was difficult in the grayness of the morning. I started towards the fairy ring and described what happened last night.
A bear! Probably a grizzly. Good thing you were over there. You could have been the main course. Sam found the backpack somewhat intact with the socks and handcuffs still inside. The bag was ripped to pieces. Surprisingly, Sam found one pack of wrapped meat still frozen several yards from the bag. He tossed it into the backpack along with the pan and other sundries. He slipped on the shoes, then looked at me. This way, Sam. The map shows a logging road at the end of this ridge.
I nodded and walked at a steady pace, sipping water. There wasn't much edible along the route that hadn't been picked clean by the native animals. Al indicated a berry bush that had some sorry fare left on it deep inside the foliage. I came away with numerous scrapes on my hands and a handful of berries. I ate them hungrily as Al scouted ahead. We came to a small creek, and I filled the canteen.
This is the only water source for a while, so they must be watching it. Come on, Sam. Let's move.
I'm tired, Al. You get a float along. I'm doing all the work here.
You don't think I know that? The only chance those victims have is you. You have to get out of here. The only other choice is being dead.
I knew Al was right, but I was beginning to doubt I could make it. I needed food, and the thought of that wrapped meat in my backpack made my mouth water. I trudged on, dreaming about the meal I would have. I had to eat all the meat at the next stop or risk losing it to another scavenger during the night. My legs were wobbly by the time the wind really picked up and the sky grew dark, the clouds bulging with rain. It would be a cold rain too, Al warned. And I had to get to shelter. As the first bat drop slammed into my face, driven by the wild wind, Al excitedly motioned towards another rocky cliff face. He had me stuff dry sticks in my pocket for a fire. Then I had to climb up some large boulders to get a minuscule opening, barely big enough to qualify as a cave. I As I wedged my body in, a downpour started, and the fierceness of the lightning made the rocks vibrate. There was the barest space for a small fire, but I had to wait out the worst of the rain so the matches wouldn't get blown out. I was jerked awake by Al's voice. It was dark. The rain was now very light, and the wind was gone. There was an occasional flash of lightning, but the worst of it was moving off. With shaking hands, I carefully assembled my dry sticks from my pocket and managed to start a meager flame. The flame grew stronger, and I fed it a thicker piece of a broken branch. All I needed was enough heat to cook the meat, which I could carefully extract it from my backpack. It had thawed enough during the day to be a bit softer, but it was obviously still frozen in the middle. Al suggested putting it in my armpit to thaw it further. With a grimace of reluctance, I complied. Winced at the initial contact, a chill coursed through my body. Ooh, I look forward to bundling up in that sleeping bag.
Ooh, how much further until civilization?
Let's see. If we keep this course, we hit the logging road tomorrow afternoon. If you don't get picked up there, I think we'll get to a busier road in about 2 days.
2 days? Al, oh, that's forever.
Sorry, but I told you this was a remote area. You can make it. There's more water along the way, and with each day ahead of those nozzles, the better your chances are. Right now, Ziggy gives you a 62.4% chance of success, and it's going up each hour. I think you have enough ember and flame to cook now. Poke a stick in the meat and roast away. I'm getting a little hungry myself.
Man, my fingers are so numb, they aren't working very well. Why is this so difficult? What? Oh my God.
What? What is it? Sam, what's wrong? Don't tell me it wasn't, was it? I think I'm gonna be sick too. It was a body part, wasn't it?
Yeah?
Oh yeah. I don't wanna know. Don't tell me what part. Sam had closed his eyes and lay back, weak from hunger, exhaustion, and emotional trauma. Finally controlling his disgust, I nervously hung around long enough to make sure Sam covered himself with the sleeping bag before falling asleep. I wasn't sure if it was sleep or shock, but there wasn't much I could do about it now. And I didn't like being here in the quiet darkness, even as a hologram. I stepped through the imaging chamber door, food the furthest thing from my mind, and driven to seek out Dr. Beeks and find out how monsters like Yang and Morin could live with themselves.
My sleep was plagued with unsettling dreams of flying knives and pleading eyes. When I finally woke in the pre-dawn lightness, I was more exhausted than the previous night. I rolled up in a ball under the sleeping bag, trying to preserve body heat. I watched the foggy clouds of my breath dissipate in the frigid air. It wasn't quite light enough to see clearly, and the thought of what lay outside my little nest was heavy in my mind. I hoped something had dragged it off, and the thought made me queasy. The smell of the damp ashes hung around me. The whole scene was surreal. I wish Al would have showed up. As I lay there thinking, I tried to ignore the little voice in my head, which kept telling me what to do. Usually I followed my gut feelings without question, instinctively knowing it was the right thing to do. But this time I tried to deny its message. I had woken up with a clear purpose, but forced my thoughts in other directions. Deep inside, I knew the truth. I knew what I had to do. But for right now, I'd rather lay here and wait for Al and try to deny that little voice and let Laura Beauchamp's part of my mind take over for a while.
Sam? Sam, wake up. Come on, wake up.
Al?
Yeah, buddy, it's me. Are you awake now?
Yeah. I'm here. Oh, sure could use a hot cup of coffee.
Can't help you there, pal. Wish I could, though.
Yeah. I know you would.
Well, let's get going here. Ziggy says there's a lot of logging activity in the area, and the chances of catching a ride at the logging road are pretty good.
I'm going back.
There's a logging company called... What? You're what? You can't go back there.
I have to.
Sam, you'll be turned into beef stew. Your best chance is to continue. Ziggy says...
I don't care what Ziggy says. I have to go back.
You'll be killed. You need to be as far away as possible from those creeps.
Ask if anyone else is reported missing since my leaping in.
Sam, you can't do this. You can't. You have to.
Ask if anyone else is reported missing since my leaping in.
Ziggy, has anyone else been reported missing since Sam leaped in? This afternoon's paper has an article about a missing 17-year-old girl. Disappeared late last night after leaving a party. She never made it home. It's them, isn't it? They grabbed her to replace Laura, didn't they? How did you know?
Gut feeling. Let's go. I didn't want to talk about it anymore as I slipped out of the cave and shuffled off in the direction I had come. I didn't want to discuss the wild dreams I'd had and the clear abduction scene that had played out for me while I was asleep. I knew I had to save the girl, or my dreams would never be peaceful again. The trek back was quiet. Al had returned to the imaging chamber to run scenarios, leaving me to my thoughts and fears. The day started getting dreary in the afternoon. The gathering clouds gradually edged out the sun. The air felt cold and moist, and I knew I was in for a gloomy night. Just before dark, I came across another berry bush and was able to gather quite a pile. The bush climbed up a rocky face and lodged itself well above a bear's reach. I ate the whole pile from a rock perch above a wooded canyon. It started to drizzle as darkness fell again, and I found shelter among the rocks. My stomach somewhat satisfied, I wrapped up in the sleeping bag and pushed myself back out of the wetness, watching the valley below. Based on what Al had told me, the compound was at the end of the valley, and as he tried to think of a course of action, I closed my eyes wearily.
I hear it. I'll go check it out.
Shh.
Calm down already. I'm a hologram, remember? They can't hear me.
Well?
It seems those nozzles may have had a temporary falling out. That Yang character has a doozy of a black eye and is roasting what looks like a rabbit over a little fire about a half mile from here. At least I hope it was a rabbit.
What does Ziggy say? What have I changed?
Nada. Well, Laura's body is now never found, and those two get caught 9 months later than before. I guess your escape made them more cautious for a while. Those aren't the type of changes we're shooting for, Sam.
I wonder if I can get the gun from him while he's sleeping.
He had the thing in his lap while he was cooking. Probably sleeps with it in his sleeping bag. But I can check later when he's asleep. Maybe he'll get lucky.
It just seems like too good an opportunity to pass up. You sure he's alone?
Very. One rabbit, one small pack. He's alone.
So Moran is alone with the new victim then?
Yeah, I guess. They'll get her weak for a day or so without food or water. Makes them more pliable.
Yeah. Well, why don't you wake me up in a while after you've checked them out? The deepest sleep a person has is usually around 4 or 5 in the morning. Wake me then if it looks like I can get the gun, okay?
Sounds like a good plan as any. Personally, I hope he gets eaten by a pack of wolves first. Hungry wolves, slowly and painfully. Limb by limb. What?
In case that doesn't happen... Wake me, okay?
Yeah, right. Okay.
Wake me, okay?
Sure, buddy. Come on, wake up! Yane is still asleep, and the rifle has worked its way partially out of the sleeping bag. I knew he'd sleep with it.
Cold and dark. Give me a few minutes to get everything.
Sam could barely see. He struggled to tie up the bag, his fingers reluctant to work in the chill, but managed to pack up by feel. I helped him with his footing down the face of the cliff to the ground and indicated the direction to go to get near the nozzle. Follow me closely. I'll take you there using a small deer path, but watch the low branches and bushes. We've got to be quiet. Dawn isn't far off, so by the time we get to Yang, there'll be some light to see by.
We moved slowly and carefully. It seemed like a long half mile. Al finally told me to put down the backpack. I could see black forms against the gray background. Rocks and bushes were clearer. The sun was just about up. My heart was racing, and the nervousness I felt staved off the ever-present hunger pains. It made my body feel like I had the caffeine jitters. But with the pack off, I felt free to move around. I tried to calm my shakiness with some deep breaths, but it didn't help. Al signaled me to walk slowly, and I crept closer to Yang. I thought the smell of the dead fire, and I could see Yang in the rifle. Al was making hand motions, forgetting that he couldn't be heard. Al was about 6 feet from Yang, and I stopped. There was enough light for me to clearly see the barrel and the side of Yang's sleeping face. Just being so close made me sick. Part of Laura's mind must be reacting, trying to control the fear I felt. I forced my feet to move and focused on just the rifle and nothing else.
Get a firm grip and yank it hard, Sam. I think it's your best bet. He'd wake up if you tried to take it slowly.
I was close enough to touch Yang's hair. I carefully crouched down and held my breath. I slowly reached out and gently wrapped my fingers around the barrel. My hands were numb from the cold. For a moment, I feared I wouldn't be able to hang on, but I forced my grip tighter and slowly started to slide the rifle out.
I said yank it, Sam! Go on!
What the?
Run! Sam! Run!
That's it. I'm gonna get you.
I rolled aside just as Yang landed against the tree that I had fallen into. I tried to stand, but I was lying on the rifle. I was up on one knee and brought the rifle to bear on where Yang had been when the barrel was pushed aside and the rifle flew from my grip.
Look out! Sam!
I dodged Yang. I felt for the rifle for a moment, but it was lost somewhere on the ground. I scrambled to my feet and barely dodged Yang again and felt his hand brush my leg.
I can't see it, Al! Where is it? Oh, no. Forget it. He's pulling a knife. Get out of here. This way, Sam. There's a steep hill behind you. Over here, there's a pile of rocks. Go around to the other side. Keep going, Sam. It goes down over here. You can get up the hill over here.
Stop moving, Sam. He can't see you, but he can hear you. Right now, he knows you're up here, but he doesn't know exactly where. Hold still a second.
Come out, and I won't kill you right away.
Oh, there's an incentive to give up. I hope you die a painful death, buddy. I see something moving in the brush along the base of the... Hey, they're bear cubs. I think he hit one. Sam... Uh-oh. Here comes Mama, and she's pissed. Bears have a keen sense of smell, so hopefully, Yang down there will keep her distracted enough for you to split.
We watched as the Mama Grizzly bore down on Yang, and I was amazed at the speed of the enormous animal. We were close enough to see the snarling fangs and fire in her eyes, and I thank God, fate, time, and whoever that I wasn't the target. Yang was between her and her injured baby. He fired the rifle, but it didn't faze her at all. She hit him like a freight train.
Let's get out of here while we can. I'd love to watch you pulverize that crap.
creep. This may be our only chance. She may be able to see me, so I'm leaving. You head up the hill, Sam.
I struggled uphill in the brush. I could hear the grunts and squeals of the bear running, reuniting, and thought of Mama coming after me, keeping me moving until I was over the top of the hill. I collapsed under a tree when I finally felt safe, gasping for breath and rubbing my legs. Al popped in next to me, startling me, and I gazed at him.
Sorry, one of the hologram perks. Got a few scrapes there, I see. But you don't have to worry about that nozzle anymore.
Did you go look?
Yep. First from the top of the hill, in case old Mama wasn't quite done. Then closer up. It was pretty grisly.
I could go get the rifle.
It would be kind of hard to shoot, but I guess it's possible.
No, not gonna do it. Doesn't help me any.
There's a creek over there. You can get a drink and rest, but now you've got to keep moving because your supplies are over the hill near the meat market there. Following the creek is the most direct way to get back there. Looks like you'd be there by late this afternoon. I don't know what you'll do after that because you'll be exhausted by then.
I'm just ready for this to be over, Al. I'm going to rest here for a few, though. Then I'm going to save her and leap out of here. Thankfully, the day was clear, and I held off the chill by walking briskly. Under the leather collar, my neck was tender and raw in places, and my feet ached from the shoes. But overall, I was in good shape. I kept my mind off the aches by thinking of Moran and how to deal with him. Al had some ideas.
I say, strip him down and hang him by his...
Thanks, but I don't want to hang him by anything. I don't even want to touch him.
Well then, how about introducing him to Mama back there and calling it nature's revenge?
You keep forgetting that I have to get him first. I'm not exactly decked out for hunting here.
Good point. A trap, maybe, with really sharp things in it?
Well, I'd have to set it up pretty fast because it'll be cold and late by the time I get there.
True. I guess you'll just have to sneak up on him.
That's what I was thinking. Just as Al projected, it was late in the afternoon when the compound came into view. I could only see a glimpse of white between the trees as I looked down the valley. My route had brought me to the front side of the property and atop a rise, so I looked slightly down on the buildings. Goosebumps came up as the buildings came into view one at a time. The main house was towards the front and the other building slightly behind. The sun was just setting on the surrounding mountain peaks, and I knew I had a little time left. I was about a quarter mile out when a cloud of dust rolled down the driveway from the direction of the main road, the dilapidated Jeep barely visible. I instinctively ducked.
He can't see you from here, Sam.
Don't care. I'm not taking any chances. Go see where the girl is, Al. I'll move in closer.
Moran is back in his room polishing a rifle and is leafing through one of those porno magazines. He's talking to himself, angry that Yane's not here, and muttering about how life sucks. He's definitely one can short of a six-pack, Sam. He's smart enough not to get caught, though. It's kind of a scary combination.
Where's the girl? It's gonna get cold soon.
The girl's name is Carolyn Leslie, and she's in the same building you leaped into.
Well, I'm getting her now, Al. You keep me updated on Moran's movements.
Okay. Gushy, lock me onto Moran.
By the time I crept to the root cellar, it was so dark that I could barely make out the shape of the buildings from the edge of the trees. The moon wasn't up yet, and I considered this an asset. Taking a few deep breaths to calm myself, I patted my pockets to make sure I still had the keys and the knife. I was sure that Carolyn would be in worse shape than I had been in. Escape wasn't going to be easy. I darted into the building and quickly pushed open the door. you. Here, let me take the tape off. Hold on. Keep your voice down, okay? I have the keys for your cuffs. Let me. And then I'll untie your leg so you can sit up. You're doing great. Just keep breathing. Here, let me help you up.
My feet asleep.
Okay. Everything will be okay. Take it easy for a minute and get your balance. All right, let's go. We have to leave now.
They're coming back now, aren't they?
There's only one now.
How are we getting out of here?
I haven't...
He's on his way, Sam. You gotta hurry.
Go.
Oh. Get her up, Sam. Moira's almost here.
Hey!
Get up!
I'm hit!
Oh. What? Get up! Come on!
Ow! I think my leg is broken. I think he hit a bone.
Sam! Hide, Sam! Behind the trunk of that tree! Come on!
I could feel myself becoming lightheaded. Al's voice was wavering in and out of my hearing, but his glowing form stayed close. It was a matter of time before I passed out. I sat there against the tree, breathing deeply against the pain when I realized where I was. I was in the fairy ring. I looked back and saw a dark form coming. Moran.
Go to Carolyn, Al. She shouldn't be alone.
I'm not leaving you, Sam. I gotta get you out of this.
Oh, do it, Al. For me. I need to know that she's okay. Please.
Okay, but I'll be right back.
Okay. Thanks, Al. I really didn't want you to go. I didn't want you to see me get shot again.
You look okay now. Lucky for you, Sam came along.
Who are you?
He needs help, you know. He's hurt bad, Carolyn. You can help him like he helped you.
Where are you?
I'm right in front of you.
I...
Come on, Carolyn. I can help you to help him.
I must be crazy. But let's go help Sam.
Follow me, okay?
There you are.
Moran walked the last few feet confidently until the muzzle of the gun was mere inches from my forehead. Moran's teeth were chattering, his eyes dark and flashing. I shuddered and felt the cold metal of the rifle pressed between my eyes. I felt the throbbing in my thigh. I closed my eyes and just waited.
You sorry son of a...
You did it! Good girl.
Here. Let me help you get this jerk off of you.
She did it, Sam. For some reason, she can hear me. She thinks I'm her guardian angel or something.
Thank you.
Carolyn.
You can't get away with this. You'll never hurt anyone again. Never again.
Carolyn?
You can't get away with this. You'll never hurt anyone again.
She doesn't
never
seem
again.
To hear me anymore, but she
you
whacked him with a rock,
this.
But good.
I've never hurt anyone.
What does Ziggy say happens again. To her?
It says here that Laura and Carolyn are both picked up by the sheriff's department, and Carolyn is charged with manslaughter. Court papers say that she shot him several times as he lay unconscious. You have to stop her. She can't shoot him. It haunts her for the rest of her life. She can't hold a job or keep a relationship going. It ruins her life, Sam.
Carolyn.
Carolyn, please, listen. This isn't you.
He's an animal. He deserves to die for what he's done to me. To you.
Carolyn, please, don't. Don't let him do this to you.
He's done more than you know.
I know what he's done. And yes, he's an animal. But if you do this, if you do this, he has managed to make you into his image.
I think you're reaching her, Sam.
You will be carrying on his work. Is that what you want? To be like him?
No. No. Do you still have those cuffs?
Yeah. Right here in my pocket. Here you go.
Thank you, Sam.
That's it, Sam. Carolyn here gets herself and Laura out of here to the police. Morin is arrested, but still kills himself before the trial. Oh, well, no great loss, I guess.
What happens to her?
Well, she graduates from law school at the top of her class and now works in the district attorney's office. Laura Beauchamp becomes a psychologist that specializes in violent trauma victims. They're both doing well, Sam. And you saved all those other victims, too. I think that's it, buddy. Bye-bye, Sam.
Ow, is that you?
Came in from an elderly woman who resides in one of the apartments over the alleyway. She claimed she heard screaming and crying coming from what sounded to be a young woman. Do you see anything yet, Hanson?
Nope. Sure don't, Mitchell.
There's nothing here. It was probably some kids having some fun.
Maybe. But I have a sneaking suspicion that we'd come across something. Oh, God. Possible assault victim in the alley between Elm and Ash Grove. Ambulance requested.
10-4.
Come on. Oh my God. You're cut everywhere. Gotta try to stop the bleeding. Mitchell! I need your help to stop the bleeding!
Cat.
Get your ass over here. This girl needs your help. If you aren't going to help, at least check the damn alley. God knows that bastard could still be here.
Oh, boy. Freeze!
Everything okay?
Just realizing that I'm trying to shoot my shadow.
Well?
It was nothing. No one else is here, I don't think. No, you need to hold the compress this way and cut like that.
Oh, God. Why? Why did it have to be Cassandra?
Oh, quantum leaping through time. I've leapt into situations where instincts led me to my outcome. Without even contemplating the newest situation I was in, I relied on my instincts on this one. At least this time I wasn't confused. I was laying down, and I opened my eyes. It was dark, almost pitch black. The only thing that cast any light was a digital clock that read 1:30 a.m., It was the first time to leap into a person where I could rest beforehand. It was not only a welcoming feeling, it was joyous. Oh, oh, oh boy. thank you.
You've been listening to Darker Project's version of Quantum Leap, Episode 4, entitled Silent Victims, written by A.J. Burfield. Heard in this audio were Paul Arbisi as Sam Beckett, Ben Harmer as Albert Calavici, Mindy Rast Keenan as Ziggy, Dwayne Nock as Gushi, MJ Cogburn as Sammy Joe Fuller, Roger St. James as August Yen, Victoria Peruse as Carolyn Leslie, Logan Smith as Officer David Mitchell, Jason Markiewicz as Officer Jacob Henson, Elise Crowett as Female Officer, Tanya Milojevic as Cassandra, and yours truly as Charles Moran and the announcer. The theme music was composed by Mike Post and Velton Ray Bunch. Additional music was used by Kevin McLeod and Celestial Aeon Project. Produced and post-production by MJ Cogburn. Darker Project's version of Quantum Leap is based on the Universal television series Quantum Leap, created by Donald Belisario. No infringement of those rights is intended, and no monies will be collected for said production. All stories are the property of their authors and are used with permission. The executive producer of Darker Projects is MJ Cogburn. This has been a Darker Projects production. This is Shane Harris. For more horror, science fiction, and other podcasts, please visit www.darkerprojects.com. Thank you for listening.